Hi, I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. Welcome to the first episode of HumanSec, which is all about securing humans. I'm here today with Jim Zaffaletti, CEO and co-founder at Safeguard Cyber, the industry's first and only comprehensive collaboration, chat, and social media security platform. To learn more about Safeguard Cyber, visit safeguardcyber.com. Jim, welcome. Great to have you with us today.
Great to be here.
So, Jim, before we get started, tell us about your background before you started up Safeguard Cyber.
Absolutely. So, I'm a hopeless serial entrepreneur in the B2B space. I've been an entrepreneur since 1995 and ended up being an entrepreneur, frankly, because I started my career at General Electric in the financial services arena and in the finance profession, and was told pretty clearly in my early job positions that I did not have a great future in finance. So got involved with a group and ended up starting a company back then in 95, and have continued to do that ever since. And I've been a big believer in the B2B space in general. And if you kind of look for kind of common threads about what excites me personally about being an entrepreneur beyond B2B is kind of two things. The first is I am a big believer in understanding how different opportunities translate to how different verticals need to take advantage of that opportunity. So, for example, in the world that I was in originally, it was procurement in e-sourcing. How does that manifest itself for pharma and the financial services and the like? And so I'm always interested to look at horizontal opportunities where you have to think about how different verticals have to be able, you have to adapt to all those verticals. The second thing that is kind of a fascination is I was an undergrad in economics. So I was a social sciences kind of person. And so I'm very interested in businesses and business ideas where it's almost like the social sciences theories come out of the laboratory, if you will. And so in one of my startups, it was really built around the economic idea of a perfectly competitive market. And in many ways, what we're doing at Safeguard Cyber is kind of a manifestation of other social theories, if you will, as they've, you know, left the lab and really ended up in practice in the real world.
So you co-founded Safeguard Cyber in 2014. Before we dive in here, what was your impetus for starting up the company? What was the challenge? What were you trying to help organizations with?
Yes. So there are a couple of things that were converging, and this is kind of, think about this as, you know, every company has a founding period, and ours is really from kind of 2014 into 2016. And there were basically kind of three, if you will, catalysts that were contributing to it. The first one, and if I got to give credit where credit is due to the folks at Salesforce.com and Mark Benioff. If you think back to the 2014 timeframe, this is when Salesforce was first starting to talk about the concept of the social enterprise and the idea that the way businesses were doing business was going to get transformed by the adoption of social media and the like. And, you know, we were doing a lot of work with them at the time, and we're hearing from them again and again, hey, this is the way business is changing. But this area of how do you manage risks in those arenas is something that is kind of top of mind for us as a business. And subsequently, Salesforce has actually become an investor in the business. So but what Salesforce was talking about back then in 2014 was definitely one of the big catalysts. The second catalyst that we were seeing in terms of the that same kind of time frame was in the 2015 time frame. If you're kind of a student of global politics, this is when there was a combination of a hot war and a cold war between Ukraine and Russia. I mean, in many ways, it continues to this day. But what we were observing was the fact that while there was literally a kinetic warfare that was going on between the two countries, there was also an active cyber warfare that was taking place. And one of the things that was kind of notable associated with that cyber warfare is it wasn't just about kind of the infiltration of the networks and kind of classical cyber attacks, but the attacks were coming through and were perpetrated via platforms like social media. And so that was a real eye-opener for us in terms of kind of the transformation. So we saw businesses starting to adopt. We were seeing a source of conflict between state actors that were showing up that were taking place via these digital channels, social media, and other types of communication platforms. And then kind of the third big trend, if you think about 2016, two big things happened in 2016. One is NotPetya and what was the clear understanding that ransomware was a crime that could be perpetrated on a broad scale and would be assessed against organizations, you know, greatest vulnerability, and often their vulnerabilities were these same digital channels, social media channels that were a way of getting into the organization. And then the other major event of 2016, of course, was the 2016 elections, where we saw so much of what was discussed about the nature of the election coming down to how information was shared and manipulated via these same channels. So we watched that sweep of activity and we really said, hey, this is a mega trend where people are changing the way they are doing business fundamentally. And all of that adoption, much of which is so easy without any oversight, really leads to weaknesses and vulnerabilities for organizations that ultimately needed to be protected. And that's what we really stepped into as we established Safeguard Cyber.
So I have to say, first off, Salesforce is a great partner, an interesting an investor. We recently had Jim Alcove on with us. As you probably know, he's the chief trust officer and CISO at Salesforce, very bright mind in our industry. So I'm going to have to reach out to Jim and ask him to come on with us and come on with you. I think we'd have a great conversation with each other. So I have to ask you, human security, protecting the end user, protecting the employee, how is it that in our industry there's such a fixation, so much money being invested, security awareness training is a huge market, as you know, and yet so little attention given to actually protecting the social media and collaboration tools that those people use?
Let me start by saying that concept of the humans represent, if you're thinking about the business world or business government or anything like that, the human is the last mile of communication, to use that analogy from kind of the internet, early internet days, and is the great vulnerability. But at the same time, the human is, if you think about so much of our economy, is the essential element. And so if you do not protect the human and protect the human the way that they want to work, the way they want to communicate, you will ultimately, any security scheme will fail. And I completely agree with you. If you think about, you know, the successful companies in the security space that have focused on the human aspect to it, KnowBe4 is one that comes to mind immediately. A lot of that is on just the essential nature of awareness training and the like. That is going to be a gigantic piece of what's needed going forward. But you've made a really important point, which is fundamentally, how do you also protect those humans? How do you secure the connections that they will essentially need to make in order to do their jobs and, quite frankly, on their personal lives as well? And, you know, that's been our kind of life mission at Safeguard Cyber. And the short answer to kind of why hasn't that taken off as much as awareness training, in part, is because it's really hard. And it's hard in a couple of ways. The first reason it's really hard is because humans will inherently always want to do things in the most efficient way. And so you can't protect the human on a platform like a social media channel or a collaboration platform by telling them that they have to work through a particular interface or a particular device. Humans want to choose the channels that they use to communicate, even in a professional environment, and they want to do it from the devices that they want to use. And so if you have a solution that requires you to be in the way of the user, you will ultimately see failure. And so one of the big kind of architectural elements of what we had to solve is, how do you do this in a way which isn't interfering in the human experience, is agentless in its execution? And that was kind of a major component for one of the things that we were thinking about. The other thing about this kind of concept of how do you secure humans that people have to pay attention to, and this is a little bit of, you know, I'll think about this as a company secret, but it's something that's going to get out over time, is you have to pay attention to the privacy needs of the humans. And so we've also been successful because we've been able to balance this ability to protect as well as to ensure privacy. And that balancing action is critical to achieving that objective overall. So those are kind of the reasons why I think it hasn't happened, and what I think are the things that, you know, frankly, at Safeguard Cyber, we're really doing right, and we see as the way the entire industry will evolve.
Well, you mentioned Noble before. I think one of the things they've done a great job at over the past 5 years is educating the market and not just developing technology. I know that Safeguard Cyber is doing that. So help us with that. Let's speak directly to Fortune 500, Global 2000 CISOs. That makes up a large part of our audience. They're watching. And maybe we can run through the four channels where their employees are exposed. And, you know, let's start with social media.
Absolutely. Yeah. Social media is if you think about what social media means for organizations, it's the new storefront. It is the new customer support. It is the new place where you flag, where you wave the flag of your brand. It is your new email platform in terms of you communicating with your customers and suppliers and the like at scale. And so if you think about kind of all of those different aspects, you know, it's like email, but it's also got this brand aspect to it where your imagery is out there and what people say about you is both potentially something risky if you don't respond to. There's so much that's going on in social media, and the ability to do things like watch out for your brand, the ability to watch the messages that come in and out via direct messages that might have the same malicious content or ransomware that you would see coming in via email are some of the priorities that companies have to pay attention to. And then because it's their customer support front end, everybody's putting information, everybody's submitting comments to them, and companies, particularly financial services and pharmaceutical companies, they've got regulatory burdens that they have to discharge. So it's not just about, could I spread malware this way or something like that, but could I create something that might be a multi-hundred million dollar or $1 billion fine because I haven't responded to a post or a comment that's against my Facebook page, for example. So those would be some of the risks that we see companies deal with. Another one, just really quickly, is executives, right? If I am an executive, I'm almost like the company's brand at this point. So what's posted about me, my control of my account from account takeover, the concern that I might be impersonated, like recently one of the vaccine CEOs was impersonated in social media, that's something that's continuing to be a risk that organizations face. And with Safeguard Cyber, they've got the opportunity now to actually do something about that, find that visibility and the like.
So I'm very interested to hear what you have to say about mobile chat, because this comes up over and over again with CISOs. And surprisingly, there is still such a lack of security around mobile devices and apps.
Yeah, this is, I completely agree. This is a head scratcher, but I think there's a reason why. And so let me start by saying, what's the big reason why CISOs should pay attention to it? The reason they should pay attention to it is if the richest person in the world, Jeff Bezos, can be hacked via a message, an altered file that comes in via WhatsApp, we are all vulnerable. As individuals, all humans are vulnerable via those kind of channels. And so what's been interesting is kind of this interesting dichotomy over the last year, right? With work from home, everybody has maneuvered to the communication channels that are essential for them to have a means by which they can communicate with their customers and the like. One of our customers, or many of our customers actually are pharmaceutical companies. They need to interface with the doctors, healthcare professionals, as they share their messages that are out there. And what they learned over the course of this year is, you know, a preferred channel is WhatsApp, because it is an easy one-to-one encrypted communication. And so they have a strong interest in adopting those channels, but by the same token, again, there are certain aspects of vulnerability that are out there. And in defense of many CISOs, particularly here in the United States, I think what they don't recognize is the global phenomenon of WhatsApp or even for WeChat and some of these other messaging apps. They tend not to be as prevalent within the United States as they are in a global context or outside. And the reality that we saw in serving customers is, you know, we do have quite a few customers here in the States, but we've got customers all around the world, and it's exploded. And it's a communication channel, just like email in some aspects. And with that comes a lot of the similar vulnerabilities. And there's just no equivalent to email security in place for mobile chat channels.
Right. Yeah. And CISOs don't get a pass. You know, you talked about Jeff Bezos, Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter has been hacked twice in the past 2 years. So it is a daunting challenge. What about collaboration tools? You know, Teams, Slack, this stuff is exploding, and COVID-19 yeah. has just poured gas on the fire. You know, security teams just can't keep up. There is a lack of security around these platforms. You know, what do you see? And you know, what's the implementation challenge for these companies? You know, I don't think it's just the thought of, gosh, you know, we have to secure Slack, but what's involved? What's the time commitment to do something like that?
Absolutely. Well, and so a lot of elements to collaboration platforms, right? The first thing that you mentioned there is the adoption and the alteration of the dynamic associated with work from home. And Metrigy is an analyst firm that we follow a lot. They talk a lot about collaboration platforms. And there's a statistic from them where I think the recent statistic of adoption of collaboration platforms is nearly 7 out of 10 enterprises have collaboration platforms in place. And the other statistic is of all of them, 57%, they call their collaboration platform a work hub. So, you know, hub has many implications, but one of the things is kind of think of it as essential for business. And so now you think about work from home and what's happened over the last year, and the dynamic that it's contributed to is it used to be that collaboration platforms were just kind of part of your daily activity. Now, all of your work is on these platforms. They are literally the water cooler, the file sharing, the meeting place. And with all of that kind of wonderful adoption of these platforms comes this aspect of so many different security and regulatory responsibilities that come about. Whether you're talking about things you're starting to pop up a lot, like encryption, but also in terms of who handles what files. And so concerns like data loss and the communication of information into and out of those platforms. You see a lot of them are starting to adopt kind of means by which organizations can connect, for example, a Teams platform to another Teams platform or a Slack platform to a Teams platform. And so you've got this kind of interconnectedness that shows up, which means there's new communication channels, which means that there's new things that can transit in terms of ransomware or malicious links or company intellectual property that has to be, that an organization has to have a means by which they can both detect and respond to those kinds of risks. And so, you know, one of the things that's kind of exciting about all of this, going back to kind of what we were talking about a few minutes ago about the challenge of securing humans that we've overcome, is, you know, we have built our platform for detecting and responding to these risks in a way that's agentless, that doesn't require an installation. And so when we are protecting a Slack platform or Microsoft Teams or Zoom, we're doing that in a way where our essential protections can be available to the customer in a matter of minutes. There's no, hey, let me send you that appliance and then you're in business. It's okay, log into our platform, go through this authorization, initiate the policies or the detections that are important to you. Now you're in business. Now you're detecting and you have the ability to remediate it. And so that kind of ability and to ability to do it fast is, as you're implying, absolutely essential for organizations. They don't want to add a new security tool, and they certainly don't want a tool that takes a lot of attention and time. And we've really tried to be responsive to that.
So just so that CISOs aren't beating themselves up too bad after watching this, but they're great. I mean, we love, you know, working with the CISOs because, you know, they've got a tremendous challenge and, you know, they have to be admired for what they do. But, you know, let's talk about enterprise apps. You would think that we're in a better place with security around enterprise apps. Yes or no?
I mean, the short answer is it's a little bit of yes and no associated with it, right? The interesting thing about enterprise apps is that they are, or exciting, depending on how you want to look at it, is they're exploding, right? Every day you will hear about a new tool that DevOps or SecOps wants to use that's out there. That's the good news about, you know, doing business better. That can get people like me really excited. But by the same token, what that means is that every time there's a new platform, there is a new potential risk that is out there. And so when you've got, when you've built your protection for your organization around building a perimeter around your network, or even around your cloud instance, or you are protecting by redirecting all your traffic through kind of a particular avenue, if you will, you will always run into this dynamic where there are new apps that are showing up. And every app is a new communication platform. Every app has a new ability to handle hyperlinks and files. And so every app represents a vulnerability. And so we've really been a big believer that you've got to stay ahead of all of those enterprise app adoptions so that when a company wants to adopt, you know, new tool B, that we're there as their trusted partner in providing that kind of protection that they need for them. And by the way, providing that protection in a granularity that is often very difficult if you're using some kind of a perimeter approach that's oriented towards like a cloud access security broker. So you might have a group of people on an enterprise app that you need to protect in a certain way. That's something that we've got built in and is really been our kind of stock and trade, if you will.
So Jim, we've been following the company for actually quite a few years because you've been an early mover, and we try to identify companies who are ahead of the pack, and you have been really before the market started to develop. So can you give us, you know, some background on the company and the key milestones that have led up to 2021?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I would tell you about the, and I would say this is true for my colleagues as well as myself, is we kind of geek out about the use cases, and we geek out about the industry verticals, like I mentioned a few minutes ago. And so the development of the business is really about the development and the maturation of all of those different use cases that companies need. So, you know, if you think about kind of the early days of the the business. A lot of what we were trying to find were focused on were things like personal health information or personalized information that were more idiosyncratic to either a healthcare organization, for example, or a pharmaceutical company. And then we started getting kind of more sophisticated in terms of what we call natural language understanding. So understanding both the tone and the message that was posted in these platforms, which becomes really important if you're trying to detect things like fileless phishing attacks. And so then we found ourselves moving into the financial services industry and doing things that were either regulatory important or security important via natural language understanding as an evolution. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we took on our first media company as a customer, which included, you know, the first performance artist as a customer, where you think about executive protection isn't just about executives, it's really about highly visible or highly vulnerable individuals. And some of the work that we're doing right now that we're really excited about in the aerospace industry. Why the aerospace industry? If you look at foreign actors, one of the biggest targeted industries is the aerospace industry. It's full of intellectual property. And what's the way that organizations are most vulnerable there? And they've started to see it. It's via these digital and social channels. And so the work that we're doing with the aerospace industry to protect their digital and social channels is something that we're really excited about now. So it's these new use cases. It's the adding of new industries, whether it's, you know, media or government. That's really been kind of the signposts along the way. And then kind of the last thing that I'll mention, but it's really not the last thing in terms of the development of the organization, is, you know, we very much believe that we have to exist within an ecosystem of existing solutions. And so our ability to plug in and play nice, whether it's with identity or endpoint, we have a one-of-a-kind integration with CrowdStrike, where we can extend their visibility and almost create like an endpoint inside social media accounts or collaboration platforms. So that ability to play nice with the cyber ecosystem has been a real emphasis for us to date and will continue into the future.
So partnering with each other, Safeguard Cyber, Cybercrime Magazine, this series is all about educating, informing CISOs and security teams. We're very excited about this program. We have Fortune 500 CISOs who are very excited to come on to talk about the topic in aerospace and financial services, pharma, healthcare. Tell us about some of the people at your company, at Safeguard Cyber. You've got some fantastic people working for you who are going to join us.
Yeah, I mean the person who I'm most excited about having you guys really get a chance to get to know is my co-founder, Ottavio Freri. And Ottavio and I have actually started a couple of businesses together. So we've had the pleasure, if you will, of collaborating for about 17 years overall. Wow. Across different businesses. And he is an incredibly brilliant and thoughtful mind in terms of both business as well as cyber. And so, you know, I really can't do justice to kind of the urgency and the use case and the examples and the way that Ottavio can. So I really look forward to you interviewing Ottavio in an upcoming broadcast. We have a supremely incredible individual who leads our channels activity, who's been in the cybersecurity industry for many, many years, Karen Kokoda. She joined us most recently from FireEye. And she is, if you think about kind of the example of the social networks, right? We live in the social, we've been attracted to this world because we believe in the concept of social networks that grow and proliferate over time, and the opportunity as well as the risks that are engendered in that. You know, Karen Kokoda is kind of the ultimate social network connected individual. So I hope you have a chance to talk to Ottavio. I hope you have a chance to talk to Karen. I think you'd have some phenomenal discussions in addition to the kind of people that you described. I think CISOs from all different kind of walks of life would have an interesting perspective on this kind of the human as the last line of protection that's out there, and just how important it is for them to accomplish the job that they're trying to do on a regular basis, particularly with the current state of work, if you will.
Well, Jim, this was a very enlightening discussion today, a very exciting kickoff for the series. Looking forward to working with you and everybody at Safeguard Cyber. Thank you so much for coming on today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks very much for having me, Steve.
I'm Steve Morgan, founder of Cybersecurity Ventures and editor-in-chief at Cybercrime Magazine. Joining us today was Jim Zaffaletti, CEO and co-founder at Safeguard Cyber, the industry's first and only comprehensive collaboration, chat, and social media security platform. To learn more about Safeguard Cyber, visit safeguardcyber.com. You can keep up with all of our media at cybercrimemagazine.com.